Get ready to get blitzed on the Blitz podcast at thehuddle.com with your hosts Steve Gallo and Harley Schultz.
Welcome back to another episode of the Blitz Podcast. This is the week three, the end of the preseason. I'm your host, Steve Gallo, joined by my trusty sidekick, partner in crime, Harley Schultz. Harley, how's it going?
I am sleepy today, Steve. It's just kind of a sleepy week right now.
Yeah, we're getting hammered by some storms. Got more storms coming later this week. Hopefully everybody's okay that was in the path of Ida. I think her name was Ida, right?
I never remember those names, but yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, what happens in week three of the preseason? You don't see the starters play all that much. So I'm going to treat my voice like I'm a starter, and I'm not going to talk too much before I actually just throw it on over to Harley Schultz for this week's Blitz Podcast News.
Thank you, Steve. Colts veteran wide receiver T.Y. Hilton will miss multiple weeks with a neck injury sustained at practice. At this point, we can neither confirm nor deny that the injury was sustained when T.Y.'s head whipped around while watching youngsters Michael Pittman and Paris Campbell pass him on the depth chart. Marquise Brown returned to practice Monday after missing over a month due to a hamstring injury. Brown's return to the field officially doubles the healthy occupants of the Ravens wide receiver room. Speaking of the Ravens, Baltimore suffered the most fantasy-relevant injury this past weekend as running back J.K. Dobbins was lost for the season following a knee injury. We asked Baltimore's coaching staff about Dobbins' injury, and they stressed that everyone would have to step up to make up for the loss of their starting running back. Now, for those of you that do not speak coach speak, this simply means that Lamar Jackson will get 30 carries per game. And with this volume of usage, we can only hope that Jackson won't need to take as many of those unscheduled bathroom breaks mid-game this year. The Detroit Lions surprisingly cut their most accomplished veteran wide receiver, Breshad Perriman, Monday. Breshad, the son of longtime Detroit wide receiver Brett Perriman, couldn't live up to his father's own mediocre career numbers, and now he has lost his job to scrubs like Tyrell Williams and Khalif Raymond. Now, I don't know here. Maybe I'm just spitting, but maybe football isn't the right sport for the Perriman bloodline. And finally, the Houston Texans are planning on keeping Deshaun Watson on their 53-man roster all season long, and listing him as a healthy scratch each week. This will actually force Houston to pay Watson his entire salary. Obviously, this ridiculously insane plan raises the question, is Bill O'Brien back in charge in Houston? This has been your BPN News Update.
That's the first thing I thought of, man, let me tell you. Wow.
They're paying someone to not play for them.
Yep. So, yeah. There's still an outside chance that I think he gets traded. I know I was doubtful that he'd play this year, but I thought that'd be because of the commissioner, not because the team wanted to pay him to have a year-long vacation.
Well, not to mention the fact that you're taking up an active 53-man, I mean, well, not game day active spot, but an active 53-man roster spot would be.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they could ask for a commissioner exemption, but I don't know that he would grant it. But anyway, lots happening in week three of the preseason. I know you had a couple of drafts. How'd your drafts go?
Well, my drafts actually went really, really well. But one of the main reasons why is because I didn't take J.K. Dobbins in any of them.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I, unfortunately, Dobbins, who's been consistently going at the end of the second round, early third round in most drafts. I witnessed him go at the second from the last pick in the second round on Thursday of this past weekend. And of course, obviously, over the weekend, knee injury, turns out it's torn ACL, and he won't be playing again this year. Really feel bad for the owner, because it's J.K. Dobbins. I mean, you're expecting him to be either your number one or your number two running back in most cases, and to invest that high of draft capital, and then to lose him before a single game is played, that just really has to sting to the heart. I couldn't imagine, like, knowing that you still have to go through the entire football season having already lost one of your key components.
So it's never easy, right? But what's the thing that we always try to say to people is, you don't win your championship on draft day. You don't lose it on draft day. You can make it harder or easier on yourself, and losing a guy like Dobbins can make it harder on you. I can tell you that years ago, remember when, I can see the team. Running back, Kansas City, Jamal Charles. Remember when Jamal Charles blew out his knee in, I believe it was preseason or week one or something like that?
That was a sad day.
Yeah, he was my first round pick that year.
Ouch.
I still made the playoffs. I didn't win the championship, but I made the playoffs. So if you've lost Dobbins, don't fret. It probably just feels worse because it's more than likely very fresh because it just happened right after you drafted, right?
Yeah.
So,
but along those same lines, though, it's still you've been looking forward to it. And I mean, draft day, I mean, even in a season long or a dynasty or whatever format you're playing in, draft day is like Christmas.
Yes.
You've been waiting patiently. You see all these beautiful packages sitting under the tree. And then you wake up that morning and you run down the stairs in your pajamas. And you just want to rip into those packages and see these shiny new toys and presents that you've been sitting on. And you know they're there. And one might look like a bicycle.
It is.
You know it's a bicycle, but you still want to open it because you want to get to that bicycle.
But you open it up now and it's got a flat tire.
Unfortunately, yes. Or in this case, maybe two flat tires.
Or a broken chain. Something you can't fix easy, unfortunately.
Oh, but look. I mean, again, it happens. Yeah. The odds of it happening to you are the exact same of the odds of it happening to someone else. In the very same league that I'm talking about now, about 15 years ago, one of our frequent champions drafted Tom Brady in the first round to be his quarterback. It was a 6-point passing quarterback league, so it was during Tom Brady's prime with the Patriots. And we were sitting at the bar watching the opening game, and well, that was the year that Tom Brady got injured in the first 10 minutes of the season and was done for the year. And then we saw a lot of Matt Castle that year.
By Bernard, I can't remember his last name, safety for the Chiefs, heavy hitter.
I remember that, who was the player, just because, I mean, everyone was so in awe of what was happening. I mean, it's in a sports bar with lots and lots of big screen TVs, and everyone was there. They're eating their wings. They were socializing. They were drinking their beers. And all of a sudden, right first quarter of the first week of the season, the entire sports bar just went silent.
Yep. And what was the lesson that everybody in fantasy should have learned from that?
Handcuff your studs.
Don't draft a quarterback early.
That's always the case. But yeah. But getting back to Mr. Dobbins here, someone posted something on Twitter over this weekend, and I apologize to the user. I didn't write down his name. I didn't like make note of exactly what it was. But it was a poll. And on this particular poll, he was asking people. Apparently, someone in his league, and this is a home league, so one will assume it's a bunch of friends that gather together, or maybe coworkers.
Right.
But one of the coworkers sent a trade offer of J.K. Dobbins to the owner of Jonathan Taylor moments after the Dobbins injury. He saw the Dobbins injury, but he knew that the Jonathan Taylor owner had not seen that news yet. He sent him that trade offer, and the Jonathan Taylor owner accepted the offer of Dobbins for Taylor. And the question mark then came up, well, this guy wanted to know via his poll on Twitter, should that trade be reversed? Should that trade be vetoed? Should the entire league take a look at the trade?
So,
what are your thoughts on that, Steve?
So, one, I have to say, I'm hoping that you're forgetting some specifics from the poll.
I am, definitely.
Because there's no way that somebody should be trading Dobbins for Taylor straight up based on ADP right now.
Well, that's another story altogether. But so, for whatever reason, the other owner who was unaware of the Dobbins injury accepted the trade.
Okay.
Again,
and I get
you can argue whether or not they're even in talent. I would prefer Taylor myself, but
well, just looking at the ADP, I mean, Taylor's still sneaking into the first round. Dobbins is in the mid, early second, mid second, late second type thing. But in any event, answer number one, you never veto a trade unless you know that they're cheating.
Yes.
Very hard to prove. Lesson number two, you let people run their own teams, even if it's to their own detriment. Dead money is dead money. It happens in all leagues in all different ways in all different facets, right? We'd all like to be in really – well, actually, I don't think people would like to be in as many good, strong leagues as I know that I've been in. They may just want easier competition. I don't. I want hard, good, hard-nosed competition. But that said, it's not the league's job to babysit on who this guy knows is hurt or isn't hurt. Okay, let's just change it. Take Dobbins out of play, and you make it that it's Jonathan Taylor for another running back that's not hurt, and you go, well, did they know that Carson Wentz was hurt? Because that's going to impact his value possibly. You can't police that kind of stuff. It's unfortunate. Maybe the guy learns a hard lesson the hard way, and the league also does. I think the bigger issue, though, is don't worry about what the other owner accepted. Maybe hold your friend accountable to saying, why'd you do such a douchey thing and offer up to trade a guy that you knew was hurt and he didn't know that?
Well, I think that was kind of the general consensus among the Twitter responses, and I know there were probably about 250 responses to it. I certainly didn't read them all, but a lot of the ones I'm saying, it's like, if this was, like I said, a home league, I mean, unless you're trying to be like the TV show The League and you're trying to hose the Rodney Ruxin in your group, you don't do that in your home league.
No, you don't do it to anybody if you're straight up, honestly. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's a crappy, horrible thing to do, but guess what? You can't undo it.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, when it first came out, I'm like, I had the same thoughts. So I ran through the questions like, well, is this a dynasty league?
Right.
Is this a PPR league where someone thinks that Taylor's just not going to catch the ball? Is it a situation where the other team is rebuilding and they might be getting something else in addition? And it's like, no, the specifics on the poll were very, very few and far between. And it struck me as like, you know what? I totally agree with what Steve is saying here. You never veto a trade because it sets up a huge, huge potential fiasco in the future. But I think in this particular situation, again, at the end of the season, you have to really think about whether or not you want this other guy to remain in your league.
Yep. Absolutely. It sets a precedent that's not a good precedent to set.
Yes. And realistically, does that also mean that you maybe also want to look at whether or not the other person should be in the league too, to accept the trade without doing due diligence on it?
You know, real quick, I'll touch on this, and I don't know how many people know that I was involved in a league, a huddle league with a bunch of random huddle users. We were all pretty close friends, I'd like to think, or at least internet friends, right? 16-team league. I decided it was Dynasty League, Contract Dynasty, IDP League. I decided my team was not good enough to contend for the championship, and I needed to rebuild. and there were a bunch of free agents that were going to be hitting the market the following year. And in our league, we got money to spend that's just league money. You can't use it. It's not real. It just gets used for when, like, blind bid type stuff. So I decide that I'm going to try and sell off every one of my assets that I can to maximize their value. Initially started off with guys that were on one-year deals, you know what I mean, that weren't going to help me, that I may not want to retain. And at the end of it, I wound up fielding a team that was really bad. Like, I had some inactive guys that I was fielding and became a bye week for many people. And some people started to have troubles with that, right? And my question was, well, one, I'm playing the game for the future. I sacrificed my money this year to do this. But two, every one of you, basically, not everybody in the league, but many people in the league, even ones that started to bitch about it, traded with me. Not one of them said, no, we shouldn't do this, because they enjoyed the trade they got. They enjoyed the player they got. But then when all those building blocks got put into place, they wanted to complain about it. At the end of the day, it was my strategy, and I implemented it, and it cost me. I went like 1 in something that year, or 2 in something, I think. There were some guys that left the league because of it, believe it or not. Would I do it again? I don't know. But would I tell somebody they couldn't if they were acting within the rules? And at the end of the day, they say it takes two to tango, right?
Yes.
So if, you know, you set that bad precedent by saying, I want to overturn it because of this. And that's why I say, unless it's cheating, you just let it go. And you know what? There's that thing that somebody, always people like to say in fantasy, I'd have given more. Well, then you should have reached out before the other person did.
Yeah. And one thing I always look at is, I think about from the standpoint of, if you truly are rebuilding, there's always going to be that question in your mind that, do you really want to throw away a season's entry fee, basically? Because ultimately, as much as fantasy is about fun, it's also about profiting on your investment.
Yeah,
that's why we get into DFS a lot. And but still, it's like, to invest. Let's say you're in a work league where everyone puts in $100 each year. You may not win this particular year, but the odds are you're going to win eventually at some year, as long as you're not completely not paying attention to the world that you're invested into.
Well,
but you have to kind of determine if this is the year to go for it.
And a rebuild, kind of, you have to look at like an investing, right? So stocks are riskier than bonds at times and stuff like that, right? And mutual funds. So it's like, okay, if I invest in a mutual fund, I'm not going to get my return on investment. It's not going to grow exponentially right away, right? Not like the chance it would in the stock market, where there's more risk. So maybe it's just, okay, I'm rebuilding, so I'm kind of looking at it, I'm taking a more, you know, conservative approach to investing, in a sense, knowing that I'm going to hopefully pay off down the line with my investment instead of right away with my investment.
And that kind of gets into the realm of dynasty leagues. And one of my own personal favorites from the last few years, fine folks that ran leaguesafe.com, came up with the concept of the Empire Format League, where basically you're playing in a league where you have to win the league 2 years in a row. And that makes for a whole nother level of thought, because you can't just plan for one season in that case. You've got to be planning to build. And there were teams in that format at the startup that were really, they purposely put together bad teams at the initial auction with the plan of building up so that they were better by year 6, 7, 8. Because again, in an empire format, typically what would be done is your league will pay half of the yearly prize pool to the top 3 or 4 teams in the league that year, and the other half goes into a rolling prize pool. Yeah. Now, I was lucky enough to be part of the very first Empire League, put together by Paul Charchian back 9 years ago now, I believe, is when we first drafted it. And that league's pot currently sits at a little over $7,000. That's going to be a sizable pot when somebody finally does win the second year in a row.
That's nice. And you know, that touches on something too. So my favorite format is Dynasty IDP. and 12, and not 12 team leagues, not 10 team leagues, not 14, but 16. 16 team dynasty IDP contract leagues are basically all I ever played in, with the exception of when I do best ball draft, expert best ball drafts, or some expert leagues that I take part in now. And in dynasty, though, my focus was always 2 to 3 year window, right? I mean, players aren't around mm-hmm. that long. Go back and look at your draft from 2-3 years ago, or 4 years, 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. You'll be shocked at how much was wasted capital in the first 10, 12 rounds, probably, for the most part. So trying to plan beyond, you know, 2 to 3 years max is what I look at when building a dynasty roster.
Okay, Steve, maybe you can talk a little bit to this, since you've got much more experience with IDP than myself, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners too. When you're doing an IDP startup format, where there's also offensive players involved too,
yes,
where do you draft your defensive players? At what point do you start looking at and planning to draft those? Do you draft them really, really early? Do you wait until a little bit further down the line?
So,
or is it kind of a mixed match?
You couldn't have asked me a more wide-ranging question that would get a wide range of answers. So the easy answer is to say it depends. And I'll quickly clarify what I mean by that. One, it depends on scoring. There are some leagues out there where scoring for IDPs is just such a joke that I wish they wouldn't even do it, because it turns people off to that side of the game. The other is how many starters. Okay, just like, and then the scoring part of it, just like in a normal league where you have PPR and graduated tight end scoring or super flex and stuff like that, there are leagues I've participated in where we've had additional scoring adjusted so that defensive tackles had value, because normally they won't have value in normal scoring formats for IDP. And you don't want that to happen. And then if you think the wide receiver position is deep in fantasy, go look at the cornerback safety position in IDP, or DB when it's combined. So it's like, if there's a position I'll draft even after a quarterback, it's the DB position usually, right? But throw all that together. Let's just assume that you're starting minimally 2-2-2. So you got two defensive linemen, two linebackers, two defensive backs, and we'll say one flex, which will 99% of the time be a linebacker, okay? And you have performance to tackle heavy type scoring. Okay, so your IDPs aren't inconsequential. They're going to have some consequence in the scoring. When do you start drafting? It depends on who you're drafting with. Are you drafting with a bunch of sharks and you aren't really sure when and how? In that instance, I might say, go get your IDPs a little sooner, right? So that you can be safe to get the guys that you really want. If you're somebody that's really astute and you feel like you can outdraft people, you can wait till 6, 7, 8, 10 rounds in to draft your first IDP. And there's one thing that I'll say, scoring aside, you can have some really big differences that would change this, but for the most part, most IDP scoring formats I've ever seen, whether it be performance or tackle heavy, etc., in every instance 10 years ago, I'd probably suggest that you go linebacker first, linebacker heavy, treated them like the running back position. That said, that is not my philosophy today. It's a deep position. It's easy to get them off the waiver wire. I'm more of the mindset, and this probably goes in line more with the tight end strategy, tight end early strategy. I want to lock up two studs at defensive line / defensive end first. I did the same thing in the past couple of years in the Huddle IDP Expert League. I did it this year. I do wait till I get about 4, 5, 6 rounds in before I'll do that. But again, the drafts are fluid. It depends on what happens. This year I had the 2 rounds planned where I was going to go defensive end, defensive end. It was going to be Chase Young and Miles Garrett. Actually, Miles Garrett, Chase Young in that order. I think it was 2 or 3 picks before it got to me. Miles went off the board. I was so mad. So I wound up going Chase Young and took the defensive end from Minnesota. Daniel Hunter, yes, thank you. His name escaped me for a minute. And I'm happy with him. I really wanted Miles Garrett. I think he's going to have
phenomenal. So here's a question for people that maybe are just getting started in the idea of doing a defensive league for the first time, or one with defensive players for the first time. How does a league set up for players that line up at multiple defensive positions, like someone that might be a defensive end, but they also line up a lot at linebacker or vice versa?
So I'm a little old school on this. I think there's too much that's made of this. okay, let me ask you a question. What position is Austin Eckler?
He's a running back.
Is he going to be possibly the second leading receiver on that team?
He might be the first leading receiver on that team.
Exactly. You don't talk about making him a wide receiver, right? I mean,
no.
Same with Darren Sproles back in the day, Reggie Bush, some other guys that catch the ball, LaDainian Tomlinson, et cetera. So, you know what? You classify them based on the position they play most. Now, most defenses used to be very strictly 4-3, 3-4, right, or Tampa 2. Mm-hmm. Everybody plays hybrids now. So you're going to get a mix of that. So you have to really trust, like MFL does a good job of listing players at the proper positional spot. And then you just have to understand that their value is going to be impacted by how you create the scoring within each of those positions. I've advocated for the past probably 5 or 6 years, and just it hasn't happened. It hasn't happened because IDP hasn't taken off to the way that I'd like to see it. But I've suggested that MFL should have created different positions like this so that you can score. You want to have they already do defensive end and defensive linemen, right? Or you can, yes. Defensive end, defensive tackles, or you can group them together as defensive linemen. At the linebacker position, we're going to come back to that. At the safety spot and the cornerback spot, they can break them out, cornerback, safety, or DB, right? Mm-hmm. By being able to break out those four positions, you can give them different scoring so that you can help to offset if the safeties you want to have a little less scoring to make quarterbacks a little more valuable because they're so deep. Same thing with defensive tackles versus defensive ends. But when it comes to linebacker, you can only have one spot, linebacker. And that's where the problem comes in, because your middle linebacker is usually a tackle hog in a 4-3. I'm sorry, in a 3-4. Yeah, mm-hmm. a 4-3. I'm getting myself confused here. In a 4-3. But then also if you're playing a Tampa 2 and also in some 4-3s, the weak side linebacker is going to have some value from a tackle standpoint. Those guys aren't going to be rushing the passer very much. They're not your outside linebackers in a 3-4 defense that tend to have only value in big play like your TJ Watts, right? Then you'll have strong side linebackers in a 4-3 that have basically no value whatsoever in any league because of the way scoring's done. My suggestion was that they make middle linebackers, weak side linebackers, strong side linebackers. Okay, so now you can give scoring across the board for a 4-3 defense. And then here's how you account for a 3-4. Inside linebackers, outside linebackers. So if somebody is considered an outside linebacker, it means that they're playing in a 3-4. It doesn't mean they're a strong side linebacker or a weak side linebacker. It means that they're an outside edge rusher. And now you can tweak your scoring to give them or take away value from them. And the same with your strong side versus weak side versus middle. It's just something they've never done. It's really kind of peeved me off a little bit. I don't understand why somebody else hasn't done it. The designations are there. You know what I mean? So that's my soapbox that I got on, and I'll get off of it now.
That's okay. Have you ever played in a league that's had a punter position?
I play in one currently that has punters, yes.
What type of scoring is involved with the punter?
Honestly, I don't even look. Johnny Hecker's been my punter for about 4 years. I just plug him in every week. I take a zero when he's on a bye.
Do you get his passing yardage?
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. Because Hecker does like to throw the ball sometimes.
Yeah, I think I own Colquitt, one of the Colquitt brothers, for a few years, possibly two. It's not a position that makes much of a difference from a scoring standpoint, but it's IDP, and we figure, well, we might as well have kickers. If we have kickers, we may have punters. The only thing we don't have are offensive linemen.
That would be interesting. Maybe we should get former Huddle analyst John Tuvey on coming up with scoring for offensive linemen for fantasy.
I mean, the leagues I'm talking about that I play in, okay, they're 16 teams, okay, and they're 43-man rosters, okay? So you're talking, that is 688 players, plus we have a 10-person taxi squad, which a player can stay on there for 3 years. So now you're talking another 160 players, right? So you're talking about we're rostering 848 players, plus you get unlimited IR spots. So if somebody gets hurt, they can go on there too. We're probably approaching close to 900 rostered players. Now, somebody will say, I don't want any of that. I don't need to pay attention to the defense. I will tell you what playing IDP makes you better at. It makes you better at looking at the offensive side of the ball. It makes you better at decision making on if you want to play a player, because guess what? You're paying attention to the defense and you know what that defense does and what they shut down and who they play well and how tackles go and this, that, and the other. And it helps you to understand, am I playing my running back A or running back B this week against this team, or wide receiver 3 or 4, which one am I flipping in and out because of the coverage and the type of defenses that they play?
Now, one particular format of league that I have not tried yet in my life, and maybe you have, or maybe you can speak to it a little bit, is a Debbie league. Do you talk a little bit about that, or do you have any familiarity with those style leagues?
So, no, I don't play in any Debbie leagues. I've always kind of looked at them as kind of the IDP league that I play in, since we have 10. I've played in some that have 12, what we call DTSs, so developmental taxi squads. So I can draft a rookie this year. So Najee Harris, I could theoretically draft this year, and I could put him on that list for 3 years before I have to activate him. Debbie's a little
but
bit different.
Nothing involved drafting collegiate players.
No, I've never done
or that. Or high school players.
And you'll never catch me doing that, because I'm a big destination over what's the word I want? Just lost it. Don't get old. Ability. Destination. You know, your location matters more than what you actually are supposed to be able to do.
So, see, I was hoping you'd give me some advice on a league so I could go into a league and draft Patrick Mahomes' daughter.
Just do it. The bloodline's good.
Exactly.
The bloodline is good.
Well, I was going to say, obviously a better bloodline than Mr. Perriman there. Can we talk a little bit about some of the oddball cuts and a couple of the weird injuries this past weekend?
Sure.
How did Perriman lose his job there? I mean, who are they going to – I mean, Tyrell Williams? Wasn't that tried in Oakland before Oakland moved to Las Vegas and that didn't work?
Well, you talked about
– Khalif Raymond?
You talked about Houston paying Deshaun Watson to not play. Guess what? The Lions are basically doing the same. They guaranteed his $2 million whatever salary he had this year when they signed him in free agency.
And I'm just looking out there. I feel like there's quite a few teams that could use a guy like Brett Perriman. They could probably use Brett Perriman too, but
yeah.
There's a few teams out there that could use Breshad Perriman.
Well, you know what I was wondering? You mentioned a team that is kind of beat up in their wide receiver room. Could he wind up back where he started? Could he wind up back in the Ravens organization?
Quite possible.
Could he wind up in Philadelphia, where they're not the deepest with, you know, past their first, maybe second wide receiver spots?
How about the Saints?
Saints maybe.
Kansas State Chiefs opposite number two there.
That's possible too. Although I think we see Mecole Hardman take a step up this year, but I could be wrong and maybe just biased because I drafted him a few times. There's a couple of spots I wouldn't be shocked to see him land, but you do have to question, God, if he couldn't beat those guys out in Detroit. You know, I mean.
Is there any value to be had there right now? I mean, is Amon-Ra St. Brown going to be anything year one? I mean, can Tyrell Williams actually do more than catch 5 touchdowns and get 700 total yards in a season?
So,
can Khalif Raymond be anything more than a DFS dart shoot each week?
So I think what it says to me is, one, somebody's got to catch the ball. You know they're going to throw the ball enough that Goff / whoever starts a quarterback, if he were to get hurt, you know they're going to throw for over 3,000 yards. Okay? It's not 10, 12 years ago. They're going to throw for over 3,000 yards. Somebody's got to catch the ball. The two biggest beneficiaries of everything that you just said, in my mind, are TJ Hockenson and DeAndre Swift.
It's got to be, right?
Yes.
And I mean, I think everyone was high on Hockenson going into this year anyways, because Goff obviously liked to target his tight ends while he was with the Rams. But I think this just it bumps him up even higher, because I sure as hell wouldn't trust any of these other receivers on that team.
So,
and I actually was one of the big guys who loved Quintez Cephas last year, but he's missed half the preseason with injury.
So let's do this. Let's say Hawk has a year to remember and he goes for 1,100 yards. And let's say that Swift catches 60 balls and goes for 600 yards. You got 1,700 yards there, right? And let's say the Lions pass for 3,500 yards this year. Well, and we just said that you're at 1,700, so you've got to go another 1,800 yards on how many receivers? I think you see a bunch of 400 to 500, 600-yard receivers. 30, 40, 50 catches tops.
So you don't think, though, that any of them is really worth diving for other than maybe it's like a wide receiver 6 or something like that?
Correct. No, I don't see it. Could it happen? Sure. Do I see it? Would I bet on it? No, absolutely not.
Well, and how about the wide receiver core down in Houston? I don't know if you read today, but Houston has basically said that they're willing to trade any of their veterans. I mean, look at some of the guys there. Brandon Cooks. Someone suggested online that he could go back to New Orleans. That would be interesting. I suggested Mark Ingram could be traded back to Baltimore to replace Dobbins. Will there be anyone on Houston for Tyrod Taylor to throw to by the end of this week six?
There will be someone, but yeah, I'm not going to bank on them being anything. Like I said, again, how many wide receivers are they going to keep? 5, 6 of them? You got three running backs minimally and a couple tight ends that mean nothing, right? He'll be throwing for 185 yards a game tops.
Mm-hmm.
He'll add some value
here in here in Minnesota. We lost our prime for a breakout season tight end Irv Smith to a injury. He is going to miss at least 4 weeks, probably going to start the season on the PUP list. The unfortunate thing for the Vikings is they let Kyle Rudolph walk in the offseason because they wanted to promote Irv Smith to be the starter. Then to top it off, their number two tight end that was left over, Tyler Conklin, he's missed the entire preseason so far with an injury of his own. Not a whole lot behind them in terms of depth. A couple of career practice squad level talents. So is there a tight end that might be cut or that might become available on the market that the Vikings could trade for?
Yeah, the Browns just cut a tight end, I think.
Which one?
Yeah, nobody of consequence. I was being facetious.
Why can't the Browns cut David Njoku?
Njoku. You like to call him Njoku. I like him as a sleeper this year. I think we see him take a step up, but there's just so many weapons, honestly, in that offense that it's going to be hard for him to be, you know, to creep into that top 5 or 6 type tight end. I wouldn't doubt that we'd see him possibly break top 12, but there won't be enough volume to go any higher than that. I mean, what about Atlanta? You know?
Yeah, Atlanta's got Hayden Hurst they could potentially shop.
Yeah, I mean, you got Pitts, although he's kind of like going to be their quasi-wide receiver too in a sense. But, I mean, the Browns have another tight end also that they could shop who was in Atlanta, right?
Yes. Hooper.
Hooper. Austin Hooper. But again, I don't think they do. I think they stand pat. Could you see Eric Ebron move from Pittsburgh because they like Freemuth and maybe get something back for him because they're really not going to do anything this year, I don't think. I think Pittsburgh struggles.
Well, how about the Colt situation with T.Y. Hilton, though? I mentioned him earlier in the news. Sounds like he's going to potentially miss up to half the season, too, because of a neck injury. I don't particularly like the idea of neck injuries, particularly among people who are starting to get up there in age, like you and I. Is this the beginning of the end for T.Y., the middle of the end, or maybe the end of the end?
Well, as somebody that invested in T.Y. in that dollar buck chuck league, because I spent all my money on 4 players, I'm hoping it's not the end. But yeah, when it goes downhill quickly for a football player that's up in age, it goes down quickly. The cliff doesn't come gradually. So he'll have some value at some point, probably this year, a couple games here or there. Is he somebody that you'll be able to rely on? No, I don't think so, unfortunately, especially with the young guys stepping up and playing well.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the thing to remember for all of our listeners is that there's injuries. Maybe you drafted early. Maybe you're in the Scott Fishbowl and you happen to have like 4 of these guys that are out for the year already. But things happen, but for everyone that gets hurt or every person that falls off, somebody is going to step up eventually. It may be Amon-Ra St. Brown. It may be Kiki Kuti or the rookie receiver that Houston drafted this year. It might be Amari Rodgers finally beating out guys like Allen Lazard and Marquez Valdez-Scantling as the true number 2 option for Green Bay. You got to remember, yes, you had some bad luck. Or like Daniel Powder said, you had a bad day. You know what? Shake it off, like Taylor Swift would say, and go find yourself another player to replace him.
Yeah, you know, that was something else I saw on Twitter all week, especially, and it's revisionist history because of Dobbins' injury. And I see people always trying to flaunt like, oh, it's why you don't draft before all the preseason games are done. Oh, you know what? Stuff it. It doesn't matter when you draft. The injuries are going to happen, and they're not going to sting any less. So maybe I'm a glass half full type guy, but wouldn't you rather that injury happen in the preseason so that you have time to react and understand what you need to do versus it happen possibly week 3, 4, or 5 when the waiver wire is completely dry and now you're stuck with what you have and, oh, well, suck it up. It happened midseason. That's what happens. You know what? Just get off your soapbox. People play in different types of leagues. Look, I play in leagues where we used to draft before the damn NFL draft. Talk about hard, not knowing where the rookie's going to go. You know?
There's you mentioned injuries happening in like week 3 or 4. What if your injury happens to your stud in week 13 or 14? Yeah. Like literally right before you've got a chance to play for the money or the title. I mean, will happen. COVID will happen.
Yeah. Here's the thing. An old user from the huddle, he probably stole this saying. I won't get it exact, so I'll screw it up and forget it. But he said, fantasy football is 50% luck and 50% luck. Right? And while it's not 100% true, it's pretty damn true. Okay? It really is. The best team doesn't always win. Just like in the NFL, I don't care what anybody says, the best team doesn't always win. In any sport, the best team doesn't always win. People have bad days, bad series. Okay? It happens. Here's how I'm going to look at it. You draft a full team. We talked about this last week. You're not always drafting everybody because you think they're going to be a running back one or a wide receiver one. And if you're doing that, you're just fooling yourself. You're drafting to create a team that will give you depth and allow you to hopefully play at your best and go for a championship. That means that you're building a team that can deal with injuries because we know people get injured. I don't think there's anybody, at least they shouldn't, that ever drafts thinking, I've got this guy for 16 games or 17 games, however many weeks your league plays. It doesn't happen. If it did, you would only draft your starters and then one player to cover a bye or something like that and be done with it. That's not how we draft. That's not why we draft. It's not why we have waivers. It's not why we have first come and blind bid and anything else that you do. And that's not why you stash players, right? You're in an auction.
Exactly.
You're in an auction league and you draft Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara as your two running backs, right? Guess what? You're still going to roster two or three more running backs in case somebody gets hurt.
In case you draft Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley in the auction draft.
Or that from last year. Exactly. And no, you're probably done at that point. But guess what? Have some pride and still try to take people out. Or work towards the future if it's a dynasty or keeper league. There's all kinds of different facets and avenues that you can look at. And I know that so many people are driven by the almighty dollar. But don't forget why you probably initially got involved in this game. It was to have fun. So have fun. Deal with it. Take advantage of it.
Well, and
find the silver
worst case scenario. Worst case scenario, you're in your redraft league and you drafted Michael Thomas, Cam Akers, Travis Etienne, and J.K. Dobbins with your first four picks. You know what? You're probably not going to win that league. Well, tune in every week here and listen to the Huddle's Blitz podcast because we can help you win some money on DFS, right?
Yeah, you know what? And that's right. DFS is out there to help in those kind of instances. And I'll give you this, too. If it's a home league that it happened in, your buddies are going to give you shit about it for the rest of your life, right? Oh, my God, remember that time that he drafted blah, 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 blah? So you're going to have a memory that's going to outlast if you had gone deep into your playoffs and didn't win or even won the championship, honestly, right? I mean, that's what guys do.
I have one league where every single year I get reminded that I drafted a Vikings kicker in the 16th round as we were watching the Vikings preseason game against whomever, and he missed the kick right after I drafted him,
and
the coach chewed him out on the sideline, and he got cut the very next day.
Yeah, or the guy that drafts the wrong Steve Smith. I think there was multiple Steve Smiths at some point, right? There was a running back. I think there was multiple Adrian Petersons. It's those kind of mistakes that make it fun, that give you a lifelong story that you could tell with your friends or, you know, reminisce over a few beers here and there.
Yes.
So I feel like this week our episode was really so much more different than normal. We didn't say what we were going to do. We didn't have any set set, you know, set segments that we were going to do. And I'm sitting here thinking, I got to write this up. I got to tell my boss, right? I got to tell our boss, okay, this is what the title of this, this episode is. And I wrote down a word, Seinfeld. This is the episode about nothing that's about everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think that's what I'm going to put in my, in the description. Steve and Harley have a Seinfeld, something about nothing about everything episode for you to listen to.
Well, I hope I get to be Kramer instead of George.
Yeah, there's no George here.
Okay, good.
And no Elaine.
I'm probably closer to Newman than George anyways, but yes.
Newman? Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Well, I'll tell you what. In the intro, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say our goodbyes here. And I'm going to let everybody know that, yes, make sure you tune in next week. We're going to have our segments. We're going to make sure we give you your DFS stuff with your pay-ups, stay-aways, and value plays. And we'll do that every week of the season going forward. Kind of odd that there's, you know, no preseason game four because we've got an extra game in the regular season this year. And to get through that, you're going to need some help. So reach out to Harley on Twitter at Nuclear Harley. Reach out to me at Steve Gallo NFL. And of course, if you haven't done it already, sign up for thehuddle.com. We've got so much stuff. It's not just the draft prep stuff. There's articles daily throughout the season that you'll get. If you're thinking about doing IDP, you'll find your IDP rankings there. Other rankings, David writes up the games. Harley does DFS. We give you picks on a daily base, on a weekly basis, so you can see who does good, who does bad. Follow me, pick, make my picks the opposite. You'll do great. and I guess I'm just going to say, until next week, get blitzed responsibly. Cheers.